Hello, dear listener. This is Amit, and you are listening to Riderology. This course is dedicated to Kamen Rider O's. Enjoy our discussions of the series from episode 1 to 48, as well as the O's portion of Movie War Core, and Denno O's Let's Go Kamen Rider, featuring Sobarashi, me, Grimhelm of Tokyo Strike, Muzard of Sentai Rangers, Professor Watt of Estuarial Academia, and Sentai Rangers as well, with special guest Gomez Q. This is the third portion of Riderology for Kamen Rider O's, and we're actually discussing Kamen Rider's happy birthday, the 999th and 1000th episodes of Kamen Rider, and the movie that celebrated the anniversary event also, which was the Denno O's Let's Go Kamen Rider movie. The hosts on this episode are Grimhelm, myself, Muzard, and Professor Watt.
Grimhelm, Tony Bishop from Tokyo Strike.
Greetings and salutations.
Muzard, Colton Clayton of PSPR.
Cause it's a thriller in the night.
And introducing Jose, the anthropologist with the estuary accent.
Is that... I get here? This isn't my real accent.
However, you could still be said to have an estuary accent, right?
I do live in San Diego, which has several estuaries, yes.
So, there we go. And listen closely, he does sound very much like Topher Grace. So, if you feel yourself getting nostalgic for bell bottoms and pot, you'll know why.
Or if you're overcome by an overwhelming urge to kill the Spider-Man.
Yes, that too.
You all can't right, do that with some of these giant robots.
Yeah, all
Cheers
that...
Pardon?
Oh my goodness, yeah, that is what it was called, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow.
The strongest match in the history of Tokyo. It killed everything in one hit.
That would have completely changed the Spider-Man movies.
Oh, most definitely. Let's see. You know, Jose, we haven't heard any of your thoughts on O's thus far, so why don't you tell us, up to episode 26, how do you feel about the show?
Up to episode 26. It's a fun show. I'm liking it a little more than I liked Double, but I wasn't really that into Double when I was watching it, so that could be part of it. I do like the animal motifs. Being sort of a biology student, that's something that appeals to me. The fact that the O's powers derive from the sort of ancient power source tickles the sort of archaeologist bug in me, so there's that, even though that's not actually how archaeology works. But they do a bit of actual archaeology at some points in the series, which is interesting.
Yeah, I think we see two or maybe three excavation sites, right?
Yeah, and you see them very methodically removing the artifacts and then promptly not recording any of them and giving them to a vagrant who uses them to fight the other artifacts that were excavated earlier. Yeah.
Yeah, science. That's pretty accurate.
Yeah, visually I like it. I like the theme song. I like the motifs. Not really a big fan of Mizzou.
Okay. Oh, yes, that is surprising. For those people who are unfamiliar with Jose, he's very into... Have you updated any more episodes of your show so far?
Two episodes so far. I'm an oceanography marine biology student in addition to my slight interest in anthropology, so that's interesting. I think for a while, and it might still be, whenever I post on Sentai Rangers, it's actually a picture of Shouda.
Shouda!
Yeah, I believe that's still correct.
Yeah, So I do like Shadow's design. I like the power set. Don't really like the greed it's associated with, though, so that's interesting.
Now, what about Mizzou do you dislike?
She's disconcerting, and I believe that was a concern raised earlier by other people on this show, too. She's very, very disconcerting.
Oh, are you referring to the teenage jailbait? Well, I guess that's a little bit of a redundancy, isn't it?
Well, it's not just the jailbait. It's when she's in her greed form as well. It's like she's overcompensatingly motherly, and it's really unsettling. The dynamic with Gamel doesn't... That also scares me.
It doesn't help.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is very weird.
Well, someone's got to be motherly to the special needs monster.
Yeah, but how motherly, I guess, is the question.
Well, is he King Oedipus here?
I mean, well, I wasn't going to say the word Oedipus, but you know, it kind of edges towards that, don't you think, Jose?
There are a lot of points.
I actually did read Oedipus Rex for class last week, so interesting timing.
So yeah, not really a fan of her. Moreover, the Greed as a whole, I do tend to like as a faction, especially how they're not really a unified faction and more every monster for themselves. The struggle for the magical MacGuffins is a fun one, because you don't just see the Greed versus O's, you see the Greed against each other, and at some point, you see AG's personal conflicts with Ankh, because they have their own motivations for getting the medals, and such, or, yeah.
Yeah, no, I understand that. What about, and I have to comment, even though I have extensively, on the Greed infighting. I like the fact that it's really less infighting and more independent parties vying for control over limited resources.
Because the cell metals are very much a limited resource that they can generate more of, but it requires an investment. Goes into the slight coin theme, which isn't really explored as much. But the fact that not just the cell metals, but the core metals are significantly more powerful, and even at this point, they do start mixing at this point, because Kazali has teamed up with Dr. Mackie. At this point, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's correct. At this point, he's become basically the vessel, which I think is the nomenclature in the show. I believe that comes from of old, but it's not really clear.
But it's interesting how he is not necessarily restricting himself to his own metals. It goes back to your points about struggle over the limited resources. He just wants, and I'm sure the rest of the Greed want to just experience things, and so they're trying to gather as many metals of any kind at that point.
You know, when you kind of think about it, are they really so long for wanting to be more than they are, to experience things they've never experienced before? You can argue their methodology, but you know.
Yeah.
It means to an end.
Yeah. What do you think, Jose, I almost called you Tony, about the struggle between Ankh and AG and their relationship? How do you feel about it?
I think that they really do depend on each other at the very core, at least at this point in the series. Because at this point, Ankh is just a disembodied arm, and AG really kind of depends on him as a battle partner. It doesn't really show up in these episodes as much, but at this point I think that they depend on each other out of necessity, but also out of a developing friendship. And I'm trying not to verge past the point we're discussing, so.
Right, yeah, that's, fortunately I haven't seen anything past that point, so I can confirm that up to 28 there's really no progression past it being a bit of a relationship of necessity, but like you said, there does seem to be some modicum of general, maybe not care for each other, but there's definitely a sincere dependency
and
that
they
share.
Their personalities do conflict a lot, and you see that a lot through the series. especially their motivations for fighting the Greed and the Yummies. But there is that dependence, and I think that's, at this point, a significant part of that relationship.
Okay, do you think we should go ahead and move on into discussing the special? the celebration, as it were.
Special!
Happy birthday!
Yeah, what did you guys think about this? I have to say that overall, maybe I'm just not familiar enough with Kamen Rider. I mean, I've seen maybe a third of, about a third of the original Kamen Rider, and I've seen the first, which I think they were definitely making fun of at some point during the movie.
They spent these two episodes just making fun of all of Kamen Rider as a whole, making fun of the tropes and everything.
But it was weird because at the same time that they were doing this, there was some sort of forward projection or movement for the characters, at least emotionally, if not factually based in what was actually going on, because it was so crazy, right?
And as I said in the last episode we recorded, there was the actual advancement of what does Kagami Corporation know about Unc Cell medals?
Right, which is absolutely nothing, apparently, right? They don't know where his
scores. If you do this, I will tell you what the rest of your cores are. We're doing this, Edgy! Oh, we are? Yes, we are. Now, where are my cores? I don't know.
If you recall, I phrased it.
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's impressive that he knows about apparently every single other Kamen Rider ever existed, yet
he knows nothing about anything in his world. Yeah, that was one of the best scenes, along with him trying to watch every series of every Kamen Rider ever at the same time.
Playing in the corner.
Yeah.
That got really meta.
I didn't even catch that. That's funny.
It did.
This whole pair of episodes was meta. They talk about celebrating Kamen Rider anniversary as a plot point.
I really liked some less familiar fans probably wouldn't know, but it was really funny. When they changed into those outfits, he was Dr. Shinigami, and I believe that Satonaka... Yeah, I believe that Satonaka was dressed up as Tachibana Tobe from the, 23rd episode, where he disguises himself. That's the flying squirrel episode. And that was pretty cool to see that.
Nearly everything in there was callbacks, and there was some of the old monster suits, like some of the, what were they called in, some of the worm in Kabuto, some of the Imagines, a couple of the, not Dopants, what were they called in, Orphanox, a couple of the Orphanox. There was all the reuse suits that they always bring back, which is always nice to see, and there was like a redone scene from old Kamen Rider.
Can I just say that I really liked Mook, and I want to see him come back.
Mook.
Yeah, let's discuss Mook.
I'm Mook. My name's Mook.
I don't have strong opinions about him, but Colton, since you liked him so much, let's hear what you have to say.
I just find it interesting that we have, apparently an ex-Shocker who's survived on, and he kind of wants his revenge, but he keeps unknowingly getting a heroic side and saving the Kamen Rider and ends up fighting with it. It's very weird. But it's kind of interesting to see that, you think about it, it's kind of interesting that he kind of is self-aware that, Shocker really can't exist without a comrade to counter them, and that he does appreciate that struggle. It kind of gives depth to what you'd think is otherwise a generic fodder. And that's important, I think. Mm. They're not just nameless magical creations that are dressed up. They're people in suits.
He is nameless.
He may not always
see
their personality, but they exist. That he's not nameless, that's his name. It's not a creative name, but it is his name.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of felt I understood what they were trying to say with that, I believe. But at the same time, it felt, I don't know, almost like you could have had a situation where the greed are going to be destroyed by something, some other force, and Eiji and Ankh try to stop them from being destroyed, even though it would benefit people because, no, we need, as a Kamen Rider, I need to stop the greed myself, and I won't let anyone else destroy them. You know what I'm saying? So I get the sentiment, but at the same time, it's really kind of a ridiculous setup.
Eh, I suppose so, though I liked how his particular desire was represented through the greed by using the coin, and he just starts creating a ton of fellow fodder to recreate Shocker. I would have started with some commanders myself, but hey, he's the bottom guy. He wants to fill out his ranks before he goes up.
The struggle against the Kamen Rider, because he is that frontline soldier, so. Exactly, yeah.
He wants to see his little people win.
You get that yummy who's like sort of half Scissors Panther Jaguar thing and half Ika Devil, I want to say.
Yeah, I believe there was specifically Ishinomori was the face actor for a Kaijin and Kamen Rider, like maybe in 98? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, 78 or 79, where it was actually Squid Jaguar. So it is... Like, and I believe, if I'm recalling correctly from stuff that Ika Devil's talked about, that this, it's called Isogen Jaguar, and he specifically created it, Ishinomori did, and, like, directed the episode and was super involved with it, and then it was kind of resurrected for
the creator as well.
This special.
Okay, because I did not know
I believe
that,
so.
I assumed it was Scissors Panther Guy thing from Kamen Rider the Next and the respective... V3.
That in itself was a callback to the original Kamen Rider.
Okay. And,
Scissors Jaguar.
And Ika Devil, the guy who shows up a lot.
Yeah.
I liked the shift in desire, from I want to see Shocker again into I want to fight the Kamen Riders alongside my fellow foot soldiers. And how that was represented, motivationally by the shift in what sorts of yummies he was producing.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting that they went ahead and went with that. And I like that it was actually a pre-established thing, that one's desire changing or becoming more true to oneself could change the yummies spawned. And I also just got a kick out of seeing the mooks from Black RX. That really made me happy. I feel stupid because I'm okay criticizing stuff until, like, oh, wait, no, I recognize that. I like that a lot. You can color me hypocritical on being happy about seeing some of those grunts come back.
Thought the forward motion in the plot juxtaposed against the really metafictional, really rather silly, even for this show, I would say, self-contained story mixed with the juxtaposed against the forward motion of the plot. That was interesting, weird, and I'm not sure it worked as well as it could have if this were more of a self-contained episode.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, there is that slight progression, like the Dr. Maki and Chiyoko stuff, and maybe stuff with, I can't remember her name, the strong girl, Hina, with Hina.
The one who has a power she has no reason to?
The muscle-bound rage machine.
Yes, exactly. Which...
Like, you know, punch that Greed's head off. That'd be great. It's comedic super strength.
Yes, unfortunately.
It just shows
but like there,
the most
there were little
times.
Kind of character moments between some of them, but I don't know. I almost wonder if maybe it's kind of telegraphing changes to come in the future. Like Ankh as this enemy, as the Shocker commander. Like, is he going to at some point break away from Eiji because he has enough cell metals or core metals rather, and become a force for evil? I think it's interesting that the show is in this metafictional episode, kind of putting forth, or planting seeds rather, of stuff that can later develop, and just showing little tiny glimpses into the characters' interactions with one another that I think are going to have resonance in future episodes.
Ankh is the villain. That was just an amazing scene. He was just overacting ham, and it was fun.
And you can tell he was having fun doing it as well.
Always important.
Yes.
Probably.
He got to be himself for a while.
There's nothing more fun than playing the overdramatic villain.
Do we have anything else to say? Are we forgetting to say anything really important about these episodes, other than how strange they were?
They made a comment on Broto's acting skill. We saw the opening of a birthday, which was the giant scorpion robot that Birth can form if he throws in 1,000 cell medals.
That was interesting. What is that? What do we think about that?
Nice way to use all these parts.
It's expensive cost, though.
Does it show up at one of the excavations they do? Yeah, I'm pretty sure, like, it shows up during one of the Kogami Foundation's archaeological digs. It just shows up,
pretty cool.
And they're using it to excavate. Which I thought was kind of hilarious.
Yeah.
Because it shows a practical use for it.
Didn't he, like, jet ski or something behind...
getting blown up by...
Yeah, he used it once.
Yeah, that's weird.
It was definitely a fun little special. It may not have been the most important, but, you know, it had its moments.
I don't know. Like, honestly, I kind of felt like it was tedious, and I wish it would have just been a 1,000th episode. Like, why not break with the format?
I do have to say, Goto, you and your live machine gun fire, realism!
Yeah. Oh, you know what, we should talk about that. That kind of stuff was really funny. And I like that whole bit where they were making fun of the first, it seemed like. I mean, does anybody have it on authority that they were, in fact, making fun of the first? Because it sure seemed like that.
I've heard comments here and there that they were making fun of most Kamen Rider, but it's debated whether it's between Kamen Rider the first or Kamen Rider as it was back then.
I think it's all just loving jabs.
Yeah, I think it can work any way as you throw it.
Yeah, I actually really liked, I was impressed by how cool and Hongo-like AG really seemed in that scene. I thought, why don't they dress this guy like this more often? Yeah. That looks actually looks pretty cool. And I like how they did, like, that old-school slideshow, like, almost showing manga images of O's back in back in time when Kagami was explaining stuff in the beginning of that first episode. I thought that was really neat. It had some good... I was going to say feels, but I don't mean it like you young people use it, because I hate that. It gave some good... I don't know. I don't know how to articulate this properly, but, yeah, I guess some good vibes. It had a good ring to it, I guess, the way they did it. And it really worked. I thought that was... Like, that artwork, first of all, was really well done, capturing Ishinomori's style, and... It fit, and I thought, like, wow, they almost make me believe that, you know, O's was the original writer or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it works.
Yeah, they had me with that until you walk into the room and Kagami is
I guess even though I do have my
Kamen Rider
kind of strong complaints, like, I feel like it was pretty, like, fairly lacking for an anniversary. I do feel like in some aspects they did really capture the spirit of Kamen Rider fairly well.
Mm. They did okay with it as a whole. And it was a fun two sets of episodes. A little weird, but still really fun.
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with Rider as some of the other people on this show. I mainly do the Sentai stuff on this website, Power Rangers stuff too, but I think it's captured the spirit of Kamen Rider that I've seen. I did watch the next.
I think it's funny that you skipped the first and went to the next.
Yeah, that's the same problem I had. I found the first a few weeks after when, the one that Colton hates.
I hate something?
That's a good question.
The subgroup that Dino? Colton hates.
Oh, TVN.
Colton? Yeah, they subbed it like 2 weeks after.
Yeah.
And that's where I saw the first. Still a really confusing story, but still enjoyable if you ignore most of it and just enjoy the Rider parts.
Yeah.
You know what? It makes more sense if you read the manga. I saw it a couple of years... Actually, the first is one of the first things I saw of Kamen Rider, which is kind of strange, because when I went into the show, to the original show, I thought, oh, well, they really did a disservice and changed a lot of things to this, but, you know, it tries to follow the manga, and I actually think it does some things better than the original show did. One of the things I actually like about the first, which I can't believe we're talking about that here now, is that they actually make the other Shocker soldiers, or cyborgs, like Riders, or, like, technically, all the Shocker soldiers are Riders. In their own, you know, they're a spider rider, a bat rider, et cetera, et cetera.
It's just they become more monstrous with the further they've been augmented.
Right, exactly.
Ghost Rider?
I wish they would have
stuck Ghost Rider
with them. It's really cool in the first, they all look like they're riders.
I really like the way they did the helmet. the helmet things in that series too.
Right.
How, like, they can all remove the head.
Yeah, that was really, really interesting that they did that. Let's go ahead and move on to Let's Go before we turn this into the first podcast.
Let's go, Kaija!
You got the wrong Let's Go there. It's actually,
Got the better Let's Go.
You know what, you could be right, and I do think that that year the 35th anniversary Sentai film was better than this Rider film.
Yes, just a little.
More than a little.
It was interesting. It was a time travel film.
Yes, it was.
it stuck a giant knife in my brain and hit scramble.
Yeah, you know what? I don't really think it was that mind-blowing, or I don't think it was really that. Like, what in particular, Colton, messed with your head so much?
How about the time travel in the end where somehow all the writers show up, even though with the way history is altered, they should either all be slaves to Shocker or non-existent? V3 wouldn't have existed!
Yeah, and wouldn't V3 have existed anyway? And at the very least,
apparently,
the Shocker
Riders... Apparently, if you take Deno time logic where memories are the key to, like, existence, the existence of a thing or a person in someone's heart or mind is kind of what clinches it, and in order to erase somebody from history, you would have to erase the memories of them from everybody's hearts. It kind of...
And
it legitimizes them being there. I mean, it's definitely a stretch, but you kind of almost get a twisted or a like time folding in on itself when the futures. I kind of think that what happens with all their crazy time travel stuff is that
Marty, like, timeline, this is how time travel works, Marty.
I think they overlap and kind of blur into each other. Therefore, the people can have these nascent and nebulous memories of the writers in their hearts, as well as the other Ishinomori heroes, while simultaneously being in an alternate timeline where Shocker had ruled. You know what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying.
Everyone remembers because
that
Deno's
doesn't mean what you're saying makes sense.
Yeah,
then again, I haven't seen Deno, so I'm coming in from that perspective.
And to be
fair, I tried watching Deno. It's weird.
I finished.
What about you, Tommy?
I'll be fair. I'll finish Deno, and this is a plot point for the secondary rider of Deno, because every time he transforms, someone forgets their memories of him. So he only has limited cards.
Okay, that's interesting. But Tony, would you say that this movie accurately portrays the time logic used in Deno?
It's about par for the course. Pretty much with Deno, anything can happen as long as someone remembers something. And since there are other riders who've crossed with other riders before, they remember them so the riders can come back. And because they remember them, everyone else does.
Yeah, well, when you put it that way, it does sound really screwy. So
That's basically the Deno logic. As long as the Deno riders remember the riders they met in the past, and those riders remember other riders, all the riders can exist in the same period. And now that we've had a crossover, that means all Super Sentai can exist. It doesn't matter what you do now.
So it's all Decade's fault.
Honore Decade-o! Thank you!
I was expecting that Honore line to be directed at Decade.
I feel sorry for Decade, because this was the first film after Decade showed up where all the riders had gathered up. And instead of doing what they had planned for him, which was have him as the driving force for the next 6 or 7 years to be the reason all the riders teamed up and could team up, they just made him a guy in the background as always, as same as everyone
else.
Didn't
even get his voice back.
No, all he got was a, Decade-o, Decade-o! And he just showed up and does his hand clean.
And I feel like his actor would have been fully okay with coming back, too, because he's come back a lot.
He seems to like doing this.
That actor has said...
He loves being a comic
That
writer.
Actor has said he's going to do everything he can to come back, because he wants to improve Decade's reputation after what happened to it.
And maybe
Decade 2!
Yes, give us a second season of Decade and watch the fanboys cry.
I'd love a second season of Decade.
Oh, wouldn't that be amazing?
I'd watch it.
Maybe in four more years they'll do that.
They might.
It'll be called Two Decades.
They'll call it Decide.
That would be pretty awesome if they updated him so that he could actually become all the different writers.
Yeah.
And then he gets to meet the really old writers.
Yeah, that'd be pretty awesome.
They did Decade the way they did because they couldn't get all the actors back. But if they had been given and if they had pushed Decade back an extra year, which wouldn't have really worked for him, but given the name and everything, if they had pushed him back an extra year, they could have gotten just about everyone except for maybe 3 brides.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were impatient.
But about Let's Go, I wanted to say that I thought, I don't know, I enjoyed it overall, and there were certain things that were really good and I thought interesting about it, like the fact that kind of with the time travel mess that Shocker ends up... Well, first of all, there's the conceit that Shocker had made their own metal, their own core metal, but they couldn't power it because there was no, I guess, authenticity to it. But
there was no cell metals to let it have some form.
Yeah, they had no cell metals to charge it like the other core metals.
One metal can't do crap. It's got at least two.
They used a cell metal that they dropped in the past, and when they came back to the future, they managed to put that into its purest form, which would be a core metal, but it's still basically a cell metal. It has no individual charge. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's good to know that that's reflected upon later. Which is, I think, really funny because this... I know the movies and the shows don't usually cross over. I mean...
Very well.
I kind of hold Todd's opinion that just ignore the continuity thing. But it would be nice if information like this was a little more widespread so that it would make sense as opposed to us just having to accept that, oh yeah, this is because. Well, why? Because. So that's a little disappointing, but I'm glad it gets expanded upon later. I gotta say that I guess getting back on track, I like the fact that given the conceit that Shocker had kind of known about the metals and had done something similar and then they were able to capitalize upon it when an opportunity presented itself, I think that's really cool. The second thing I gotta say is I absolutely love that Shocker greed. That thing is amazing. It looks, just the design is fantastic, and I think it really carries over, not emulating, but encapsulating Shocker in its various forms, like the Great Leader's, snake gorgon head that he has, but also the eagle seal that they use, and just, I felt like it was a really, really great way to make a Shocker greed. Like, had they gone with a different design, it could have been better, it could have been worse, but this one was really solid.
Yeah.
I really like the gas mask motif that it had.
Yeah, that was,
yeah, that was very interesting.
They paid attention to a lot of the details. And it shows up in this quite a lot.
Yeah, there's something so menacing about a gas mask. It's just really a sick, and I mean, in a bad way, sick look. And, at least in the States, there's this brand of clothing which has people, riding bicycles or something with gas masks on.
Mm-hmm.
And, I find it quite objectionable and detestable because a gas mask to me, makes me think of World War I and all the chemical warfare that was going on. And it's just like evoking death and destruction, in the most careless way.
We have those as well, and they got saucy because those t-shirts were originally, a protest against some pollution thing, and then they just became really popular.
Well, there you go. But I just, I just think it's very useful, like Jose pointed out, that it's put to really good use with that Shocker greed.
Yeah.
Right, it captures that idea that Shocker is sort of on that wanton destruction pathway thing.
Yeah, it really does, and I felt like they were so effective, and it was interesting and good from a dramatic story perspective to see them succeeding so well.
Mm. It's odd to how their plans usually go.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it also shows, kind of, in a funny way, it shows how bleak the future would be without Kamen Rider having been in the past. And, of course, it's, their hero, it's Toei's hero, it's the property, so of course, without Kamen Rider, everything would fall to pieces. But it just, as much as one could be could make complaints about that and say that it's kind of self-indulgent. I think Kamen Rider really does stand for something besides merchandising and, you know, corporate profits. I think that...
As much as Bandai doesn't want you to believe that.
Right.
Well, that's all it is to Bandai.
Right, but I think it really does carry with it this great, like, fighting spirit. And I love, I think it got said a couple times in this movie that, like, as long, wherever there's darkness, a Kamen Rider will be there to fight against it. And I just thought that was, like, really, really a great message.
Mm. It was an interesting movie, to say the least. There was plenty of parts with some really good show aesthetics. The storyline is so-so, but it's still really entertaining if you give it the leeway to pretty much screw with history a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. So, Tony and Colton, you're both fairly displeased with this movie, right?
I don't mind the movie, it's my least favorite out of all of the team-ups.
It's not terrible, but it's kind of stupid.
From Colton Clayton, everyone.
Yeah, I guess that's
of all people.
That's a pretty harsh indictment. Mocked me, thanks.
Oh, we haven't even started yet.
Well, you are very agreeable to most things, so I guess what was so stupid about it? Just the time travel stuff?
Coming from a person who loves time travel in many incarnations, this was some of the worst done time travel I've ever seen. People usually put thought and planning into how time travel works and how they're gonna like make it happen, and if it messes up, how to fix it or how not to fix it.
They gave up with Denno about halfway through the series.
Yeah, I can't speak for Denno because I didn't watch through too much, but this is just, it just imploded in on itself.
Yeah, it's more or less they gave up caring about how it actually worked after they explained it all in the first couple of episodes.
Okay, because that was about to be my next question, because the mechanics seemed to be carried over from that.
I thought it was cool, the little line that Kota is a singularity point, so, like, it's okay for him to screw with history.
Kota?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Kota
yeah.
was
the... child.
He's the new Denno, is that right?
Yeah. It's, Yeah, he's the great-grandson of the original Denno, yeah.
That's a complicated history I don't care to get into right now.
Yeah.
I know nothing of it, and right now I don't have the patience for it, because...
It's all DM's faults, let's just say that.
Okay, well, I'll get to that show when it happens, but I'm not excited to delve into it. Did you guys, have a problem with the double riders not being brainwashed at the end, or whatever, however that worked out?
It's Rider continuity, just go with it in the end. I do like that they got Shotaro and Philip back at the end, but beyond that, because I can imagine these two would have their workers Listen. Help for them in a world surrounded by evil and still trying to do the whole detective thing. In fact, I reckon they'd be quite well off in a world like that.
Yeah, they'd be flush.
Yeah.
They'd be busy constantly.
Of course. And that would make it even harder for them to keep their secret identity, because they wouldn't be able to just stand around and tension all the time. They'd have to do it in secret a little more than would be healthy.
Now, Jose,
that's the double series I want to see, the Shocker World with Denno, the Shocker World of a double, seeing how they'd run a detective agency like that.
That'd be a fun story.
Trying to turn away the mooks to giving them buy-offs to drop cases every now and then.
Yeah, maybe. Jose, you kind of, I don't know if you started a guffaw, but you sound like you wanted to say something about that that twist at the end.
I thought Decade looked very dejected standing in the second row instead of in the front.
Yeah. Poor Decade.
It was interesting. Like, I thought it was amusing. I didn't think it was exceptionally good or exceptionally bad. I thought it did its purpose as a Kamen Rider 40th anniversary crossover movie. I do wish they had a chance to do something with Decade, because he seems like the sort of writer this would lend itself to, but it makes sense that they would do that if they wanted to do a time travel story, they would use Dino characters, and they would be using Oz as the present Kamen Rider. I don't know, like, the timeline just does not make sense to me, and that is my biggest point of contention.
Yeah, I can't really fight, I can't really fight against it, and I'm not, you know, in the business of defending these things, it's just, I don't know, I'm not super negative, I don't know, it was weird, I had a lot of fun, even though it is stupid.
Right, like, I had fun, I think it did its job, I just don't think it was exceptional.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point for you to make. So I guess overall I wasn't really pleased at all with either of the things that Oz did to celebrate the 40th anniversary of Kamen Rider, which is too bad. And even, you know, it's strange that with Forze they had apparently plans to make it very much like Decade in the beginning, where he would travel around and meet different writers and get switches based off of them, or whatever the real plans were at the time. And it's almost too bad, you know, like you were mentioning, Jose, that it's too bad Decade didn't have more of a role because of his like, super crossover nature. It's almost too bad it was the year for Oz. I guess maybe one of the complaints I would have is that they had to go ahead and make it with the Oz cast instead of just picking something that would work best for the anniversary celebration as a whole.
Right. Hina makes even less sense in the film, now that I think about it. Because she just kind of shows up halfway through and then proceeds to do nothing.
Well, except for use that giant fist on a pole for some reason.
Yeah. She shows up halfway through, she doesn't know Eiji in this timeline, and she proceeds to do nothing.
Except follow him about. Because she's compelled to.
They needed to have the actress in it, I guess.
Yeah, you can't have it without her and her freakish strength.
I guess the more I think about it, the more I turn on this movie. It's a fun thing if you want to shut off your brain, but yeah. I mean, we really shouldn't have to.
It's
you
not
know?
A That's fun thing to analyze.
No.
It certainly isn't.
That's the thing with most of the Rider movies. If you want, and even some of the Rider series, if you want to just sit down, turn off your brain, and enjoy something that's relatively entertaining, you can do that. But under scrutiny, they don't hold up too well.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. I think one of the worst things, actually, was that giant great leader at the end there that was, you know, a mountain or whatever he was. And the bikes, the bikes coming out of nowhere. Yeah, and turning into 40. You know, the number 40. That was just all terrible.
I want to see more of a full shocker Oz outfit rather than just the legs. Because those legs are quite cool.
You think that was awful because it's not the first time we've seen logo attacks. Remember 199 where we had the 35 logos followed by the number 35?
Yeah.
No, yeah, you're right about that. It doesn't make it good. Its prevalence does not make it good. That's all I have to say on that. Yeah, so I guess it is a painful experience in the history of Kamen Rider, and it's kind of too bad it had to happen. I don't know what I wish they would have done instead, and I appreciate the effort to get all the suits together, but like we were talking about, I think before the recording, Jose, you were mentioning that, you know, the secondary riders coming
in was,
yeah, exactly. It was pretty half-heartedly done.
I'm not even sure if they actually had Berth's suit there.
I think they just...
It looked like it was stock footage lifted from a previous episode of Oz, of Goto doing something. And they just
right.
dumped
you could
him
be
in.
You could be absolutely correct. That's funny, and the funny thing about that is like they did that in the Amazon Forze TV Hyper Battle video.
Yeah,
but like to some extent that's okay because it's Amazon and it's you know 30 some years old and it was just a short thing for it was a bonus thing. But this is a you know actual Kamen Rider movie and you're not going ahead and giving it this little detail. It's kind of
makes
disappointing.
Right, like at least the primary riders went in and had their signature poses through. The secondary riders were all almost exclusively cardboard cutouts with a bit of motion blur.
Yeah. And to be fair with the Amazon example, at least they squeezed that into continuity with the Megamax film.
Yeah, you're right about that. As strange as it might seem.
Forza and Amazon are friends, guys. That makes sense.
Seriously. Yep, what is it?
Now that would be a fun friendship.
Tomodachi, right? Yeah, you know what? I'm sorry, Jose, that this was the first time we had you on, because this has kind of been a painful experience talking about this Let's Go movie.
Only a little bit.
The series as itself is fun, though.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
It really is. I wonder if that makes it all the more disappointing, because actually when I first saw Let's Go, it intrigued me, the relationship between Ankh and Eiji, and I wanted to see more of it. And as I've spoken about in the previous two quarterly episodes for O's, that relationship between the two of them is very compelling to watch, if not entirely healthy. And I don't know, I guess the goodness of O's is definitely done a disservice by some of the more lacking parts of this movie.
I think O's by itself is a really, really good show. It just isn't necessarily meant to be the anniversary celebration.
It doesn't work well with others.
Yeah. No, it doesn't. Not in that context at all, I would say.
It does absolutely fine in Ultimatum, but beyond there.
I guess we should start wrapping up, because I don't feel like we have much else to say, but I would have proposed this for a 40th anniversary. Do an old-school style, all the writers together, where, like, the 10 legendary writers meet up with O's somehow. I think that would have been sufficient.
If you want to keep time travel, fine. Have something happen to the medals. Have them overload with energy and throw him back into the rider's past or something.
Right, especially because do get time travel later in O's related properties.
Yeah, have a yummy monster pretty much have some power to influence things of age. Since the medals are ancient, you could throw them back in history. They may have shown up in Ryder's hands at one point or another that we didn't see.
Yeah, that would have been a neat little thing for them to do. Or even all the Riders are cyborgs.
Yeah.
They're basically immortals. I like to refer to them basically as gods. So why not just have them show up, modern day, you know? Yeah.
Nothing stopping them. Well, maybe motorbike fuel prices, but beyond that.
right, exactly.
I'm sorry we're so late to save the world, we ran
over
a hill,
and then later on they have their
motorcycles
back.
And nobody had their wallet on them.
We blame Amazon.
Okay, does anybody have any last comments?
We tell them to take care of one thing.
You had one job, Amazon.
It was to fill up the gas tanks.
Yes. There's plenty they could have actually done with it, so.
Yes, I agree. okay. But so was that your last comment, Tony?
More or less, yes.
Okay. You don't have to repeat it, don't worry. Does anybody else want to say anything else?
I think I've said my piece.
Okay. Jose, final word? Tell me something I don't know.
Something you don't know.
Well, and here he goes into deep sea physics.
Yeah. I'll leave that to Colton, because deep sea physics is actually a lot like space.
Well, there you go.
Space, water, it's the same thing, isn't it? Oh, yes, there's no gravity in the water.
Well, gravity becomes
negligible. There's no gravity in space, right?
Gravity actually becomes negligible.
No. There's gravity all throughout the universe, really.
Right, but gravity becomes negligible for our purposes when we're thinking about underwater.
Quote unquote negligible.
Wow. We're offending Colton's physics sensibilities.
I'd argue gravity isn't negligible in space. Because you're still getting pulled on things even if you don't notice it because you're a certain distance away.
You're absolutely
gravity may be weak,
actually
but
correct about that.
Gravity may be weak, but it has a long reach.
Fair enough. But they do use underwater things for some space trading things. That's where that's coming from.
Well, it's as close as you can get without going to actual space, unless you want to do like those planes that loop around a false artificially simulate gravity.
I feel like I've opened up a can of worms that I did not want to.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to devolve into, or evolve maybe into a science podcast. So let me go ahead and close it out. Just because this writerology is printed and published and out there in the ether doesn't mean that you can't comment on it. So if you are interested in asking us questions or making comments, you can contact us all on Twitter or via the show's email. You may send correspondence to uncommoncastrx@gmail.com. The show's Twitter feed, which I run, is @uncommonrx. My co-hosts for this course in Common Rider O's can be found on Twitter @Grimhelm for Tony Bishop of Toku Strike, @Musard for Colton of Sentai Rangers, @ProfessorWare for Jose, also of Sentai Rangers, and @GomezQ for Todd, who has worked with me on Uncommoncast RX and does a lot of good commentary online, and I believe there are some kaiju shows that he's got under his belt by now too. So you can go ahead and check them all out. This has been a production of the Toll Network, and you can find more at trialofheroes.wordpress.com, the home of the Toll Network, bringing you analysis with teeth.